Hello and welcome to episode 78 of A Little Bird Told Me, the only podcast freelance writers, editors and proofreaders will ever need. We are two full-time freelance wordsmiths and we're here to shed some light on the sometimes tricky world of working for yourself, saving you from self-employment mishaps and guiding you to a higher state of freelance zen. In these fortnightly episodes, you'll encounter loads of tips, tricks and topics designed to make your life easier and help you to become the best writer you could be. So go on, head over to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com and subscribe. We've got iTunes, RSS Podcatcher and Stitcher Smart Radio options, so there's no excuse not to. And if you're a Facebooky sort of freelancer, we're on there too. You can catch us at facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast for even more informative links throughout the week. I am Laurie Hartshorn.
And I'm Philippa Willits. And today we are going to be talking about how to self-publish without embarrassing yourself. Self-publishing has opened up a whole new world of possibilities for freelance writers, hobby fiction writers, and anybody really who wants to get their words out to the world. However, there are many steps along the way that can trip you up and just make you look a fool, I'm afraid. We will go through some of the things you have to do and a lot of the things you have to avoid if you want self-publishing success.
Absolutely. And it's important to point out at this point that it really is a huge, huge old world. So what we're going to be talking about is just a wee introduction. Of course, it's not going to be exhaustive. And if you are thinking about self-publishing, our first and overarching tip is to do a lot of reading and a lot of research.
Indeed.
What we're going to look at first are the kinds of things you might self-publish. So what you might want to get out there to the world. Now, I think a lot of people will go immediately for novels, short stories, poetry collections, all these kind of creative things. It's a bit of a joy now, isn't it, that you can publish your own work, you don't have to find an agent, and you can get your creative stuff read by a lot more people.
Indeed.
So, you know, having self-publishing as a goal can be a really good way to motivate yourself to do creative writing. You know, the fact that you have to write, you know, a longer piece of work, or you have to build up a collection of short stories or poems, it can help to keep you going. And it's also nice to write for an audience. You know, of course, there are things like blogging, but when you've got people buying or even just downloading something that you've written, you can really feel like you've achieved something.
Absolutely. And as Laurie says, fiction writers have the world at their fingertips with the self-publishing options available now. But it doesn't have to be limited to fiction writing. There's a whole lot of categories of writing that you can self-publish. Something that's very common is for people with websites or businesses to write white papers or ebooks that they give away if they want to increase their mailing list size or boost their marketing or boost their reach. You can also self-publish non-fiction extended essays. You can write about things you're passionate about. If you know a lot about keeping fish, or if there's a campaign you particularly care about, you can write your own book about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people publish everything from cookbooks to how-to guides, and it's just a lovely way to get your writing out there. You know, so There are certain reasons that you might choose to self-publish rather than publish down the traditional route. Going back to the literary market, it's incredibly hard to get published traditionally as a fiction writer, even more so as a short fiction writer, which, you know, a lot of us hobby writers are. You know, obviously not many of us sit down and write novel after novel after novel, especially if we're not published authors. So, you know, short story collections, they're very, very hard to publish, even if you're an established and traditionally published author already. It's far easier to self-publish, and it's a good way to become known and perhaps can even lead into a traditional publishing contract if your writing's good enough.
It's also quick, which for impatient people like me is brilliant. If you publish through a traditional publisher, chances are you're looking at a good year and a half, 2 years before your work is out there. And for a lot of people these days, that's not good enough. We expect information immediately, and so we expect the things we produce to be published immediately as well. And self-publishing cuts out the middleman. You're not passing any sales, any kind of additional sales revenue onto anyone else other than the companies you sell through. And so you can keep more of the profits. With the speed thing, you can publish soon after writing, but as we'll go into over time, that can be a curse as well as a blessing. But one of the things that makes it really a great option for a lot of people is that it means you can cash in on trends by publishing books quickly on topics of the day. If a new celebrity comes out and you know a bit about them, you can write a quick biography of whoever it is, and then when they get big, people, you know, might well look for it and buy it.
Absolutely.
That kind of topicality can be great. Another interesting progression really is that increasingly people are publishing books on Kindle specifically that would be too short to be traditionally published. So whereas a traditional novel may be, what, 70,000-80,000 words, something like that?
Generally between 60 and 100.
That wasn't bad then. People are publishing, say, extended essays of 10,000 words.
Yeah, they're really tapping into the taste of a long form at the moment, aren't they?
That's it. And people like reading that because, again, everybody wants things quick and fast. And that can be quite nice to settle down with something you can read in an evening.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So also, if you're writing in formats that traditional publishing wouldn't go near, that's another reason that some people choose to go self-published.
Yep. Likewise, if you're touching on genres that traditional publishers don't want anything to do
with,
like hard sci-fi or fanfic, you know, or slash fic, dare we say, you know, erotic fan fiction, that you're not going to find a market for that, really.
And look at 50 Shades, you know.
Yes,
much as
50 Shades.
We both may hate it. Yeah. It's certainly an argument for erotic fanfic self-publishing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you've got, what's her name? Cassandra Clare. She was she self-published and she ended up with a very successfully traditionally published series. I can't remember the name for the life of me. But it's been made into a film.
Oh, cool.
City of Bones, City of Glass, something like that. It's a whole, I think it's a trilogy or a quadrilogy. It just became very, very popular when it was published online. I'm not sure that it was published on Kindle first, but she published it as fan fiction. And it's now, like I say, it's a very, very successful series of books and it's been made into a Hollywood film. So, you know, excellent way to stick to the topics that you want to write about without having to bend to the will of somebody else. And I think that's another point that, you know, that might drive people to self-publish rather than publish traditionally, is that you get a lot more control over what you write in terms of how it's edited.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you don't have an agent there saying, oh, well, you know, your main character's not marketable enough, or she's not sexy enough, or, you know, I think the book's too young, or I think the book's too old, or it's too long, or I don't like this subplot.
Yeah,
you know, you get to make all the calls, which, as Pip said earlier, with regards to publishing quickly, can be a blessing and a curse.
And this leads on to our next section, which is about the things that can go wrong and how to avoid them. Because in Laurie's example there, you get a lot more control over your manuscript. But sometimes, you know, editors are actually very good. And if they tell you a section needs to go, they might well be right. So sometimes working under somebody else's direction results in a far better book than doing it all your own way.
Absolutely. You know, I suppose it's worth making a point about, shall we say, being precious about your writing. And I don't necessarily mean that it's always unreasonable, because obviously if you've made an effort to come up with something long that you've put a lot of time into, then you are going to feel very protective of your writing. But there is a saying, kill your darlings. You do sometimes have to kill your darlings. You have to get rid of characters that you absolutely adore.
And obviously, or I'm merge two people together. And
Yeah, and obviously I'm coming from the literary side of things. I tend to sort of do the creative side of writing, while Pip is more kind of the non-fiction bod when it comes to the pair of us.
Yep.
But yeah, you do have to kill off characters and subplots that you love, and you do have to rewrite things. And if an agent works for a publishing house, they know what's marketable and what isn't. And you might decide that you would rather have loyalty, for want of a better word, to your original concept and your original manuscript
Yep.
than potentially higher marketability and higher sales and the chance to publish traditionally. You have to weigh it up for yourself.
Absolutely.
So, looking at some of the biggest self-publishing fails, then, it's important to remember that while writing is a craft that you might have mastered, and let's hope so if you're considering self-publishing, more on that later, publishing itself is something entirely different, and it involves a whole huge pile of tasks that will probably be new to you. Anything from putting together the book itself to how you promote it and how you sell it.
Yeah.
So, Pip and I are just going to take a quick look at some of the most common pitfalls that we see in people who've been either looking to self-publish or who have self-published.
Yeah.
Now, as I say, being precious about marketing is one of those danger zones. Writing is writing, and good on you for doing it. Publishing is different. Publishing means sales, marketing, PR, promotion, production, your book, your brand. You need a marketing plan, and you need to put your back into it. And you can't expect to churn out a piece of writing and to have the whole world go, "Yes, this is what I want." I know we've mentioned 50 Shades and Cassandra Clare, but that's a very, very, very rare occurrence.
Yes, there are a few people, aren't there, who really rise to the top and do extremely well. And then there are an awful lot of people who the novel they worked on for 12 years has sold 12 copies. I mean, nowadays, even traditional publishers expect their authors to do the vast majority of their own marketing. But with self-publishing, the onus is completely on you. You might need to take out ads on appropriate platforms, organize blog tours, start using social media or blogging to promote your work. And failing to do this is a self-publishing fail because Amazon or wherever you choose to release your book is a massively big place. If people don't know your work exists, it's really hard for them to find it.
Absolutely, and it's very similar to being a freelance writer, I find. The point that you've made, self-promotion can feel so obnoxious. Even when
Oh, yeah.
it can feel horrible, even when you're offering a service as impersonal as copywriting. So I can say, yes, I can write you an excellent blog post on
Yeah.
digital fabrics, that's fine. When it comes to my own creative writing, sitting there saying, "Oh, well, this work was about such and such, and this writing was about this," I've had to go and give readings of my work before. It's excruciating. It's
Yes, yeah.
absolutely excruciating, but it doesn't mean that you don't have to do it. The same as you have to market yourself as a freelance writer, as in the freelance writing that Pip and I normally talk about,
Yeah.
you have to market yourself if you want your self-published book to do well. Self-promotion is an integral part of publishing,
Yeah.
and unfortunately there's no getting around it, so things like, as Pip's pointed out, blog tours, doing readings, promoting your work, being able to talk about your work without going, "Oh my God, I think it's kind of crap, but
Yeah.
please don't
Ringing
read my book."
Ringing your local paper and saying, "Interview me, I've got a book out." You know,
Yes.
that's hard to
It's
do.
extremely difficult. I know somebody who's just self-published at the moment. She's having to go on TV and talk about her
Yeah.
book. I think she's contacted the local papers.
Yeah.
She's really shouting about her book because she wants it to do well. And some people will look at you and think, "Ooh, that's a bit obnoxious," but well, tough.
Related to that is another self-publishing fail that I see a lot. Now, what happens is that someone puts months or years of work into their masterpiece and they do all the technical stuff and they get it on all the sites, but they don't give any thought to writing the blurb that goes out to Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Apple Store, and so on. And it may seem boring, or to be honest, a lot of people feel like they're above writing something a bit promotional. But if you actually get somebody to the page of your book on Amazon, this blurb will make the difference between somebody buying or not buying. You have an opportunity to fill that spot with information and tempting tidbits that will make people who read it desperate to add your book to their basket. But so often, people will work years and years on something and then just write, "This is a novel about the medieval times." You know, like, you've got to make people desperate to buy your book.
Yeah, sales is not a dirty word when you're trying to self-publish.
Yeah, even if it may feel like it, you have to get over that.
It may well, but if you want to get listed on Goodreads, if you want people to be able to share your book effectively and not just be tempted to buy it for themselves, you have to, as Pip's pointed out, you have to come up with an eye-catching, tempting blurb that doesn't contain spoilers, but gives people just enough to wet their palate and to really get them interested.
Can I just say, I saw a blurb recently that I can't remember what the book was about, but at the end of the blurb, it said, "Sorry about all the spelling mistakes. I'm having the book checked now."
What?
Now, are there any circumstances in which you'd buy that book?
I would never buy that book unless
No.
I was hoping to burn it.
Yes. You know, you cannot. Well, that comes on to preparation, which we'll come on to. But talking about the blurb, that's how not to do it.
That's outrageous. I mean, yeah,
Isn't
the final point I was going to make, I suppose it fits in, is just as I pointed out at the start of this podcast, you do have to do a lot of reading and research, and blurb writing and synopsis writing is a very specific skill.
This is true. It's something that maybe if you do some copywriting as part of your work, you might find it a bit easier because it's similar to certain types of copywriting.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth spending a few hours at least reading about how to write a book blurb, I'd say.
Yeah, I know that both Pip and I have helped authors with promoting their books, and I know that we've both done a lot of reading on synopsis writing because, it's extremely specific. There's a format to be followed, just like there is when you write a press release, and the reason you follow that format is because it works.
Yes.
So, next big self-publishing fail, not researching the basics.
Ah, yes.
What's an ISBN? What is an LCCN? What do they do? How do you get one? Do you need one? Should you publish online? Should you publish in print? Do you want to go on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Lulu? How about one of those companies that offers to do it all for you? The more you know about publishing and self-publishing, the more informed your decisions will be. So what you need to do is spend a lot of time considering your options before you hit the button on your new book. We know we've said it's quicker than getting traditionally published. That doesn't mean you finish writing draft one and then you go over to Amazon and type in a little blurb and go, "Buy my book," and that's it. It doesn't work. There is loads of information out there, and loads of it's up to date because so many people want to self-publish. But you are the only person that can sit and read up. As Pips pointed out earlier, it's all on you. Now, I've popped a link in the show notes to one useful post that I found when we were researching this podcast, and that covers some of the most common self-publishing acronyms that you'll come across, because you will find that when you're reading, this is a field full of acronyms. It's so full of acronyms because there are so many things that you need. There are so many facets to self-publishing. But bear in mind, as I've said, that it really is just the tip of a very, very big iceberg. Think Titanic. So use this as a starting point only.
And so, yeah, so do your homework. If you feel you've finished your book, you will probably be feeling impatient to publish it. But don't hold back a few weeks at least, because there are certain things that we're going to tell you now that have to be done.
One of the things that you have to do is avoid publishing bad writing. I mean, you don't have to. Plenty of people have gone ahead and done it, but it's massively, massively damaged the reputation of self-publishing. It's hugely, hugely damaged it. And if you're trying to enter that market, if you're trying to enter the world of self-publishing, please don't add to its woes.
Yeah, because if you want to enter that world, surely what you want to also do is legitimize self-publishing as a respectable, effective way of publishing and reading, you know? And so if you publish something that's not quite finished or that needed another draft, you're participating in the bad reputation it's gained, which doesn't help you in the long run.
No, it doesn't help anybody. And I've, you know, rightly or wrongly, I've seen a lot of authors saying there's no way I'd self-publish because they're all so bad.
Yeah.
These self-published books, they're all rubbish.
Yeah.
And that's the impression that people have. Editing and proofreading are not just your friends. You should be locked in a room with them until you're married to them.
So many people skip this.
Oh,
and
it hurts.
And it's the worst thing to skip.
It is. I've been asked, I review books sometimes, and I also do sort of critiquing of people's manuscripts as part of my day job. And it's always so soul-destroying when you have to say to somebody, you've not proofread this. That hasn't been proofread. This doesn't make sense. Because proofreading is not with manuscripts, literary manuscripts particularly, it's not just about spelling mistake, grammar mistake. You've got to look at things like your exposition, your plot, your character, you know, where things make sense, your narrative style, your narrator, your point of view. There's so much that needs to happen in the editing and proofreading stage.
I edited a book once where I had to point out to the author that the character that they'd mentioned in this particular scene had already died earlier in the book.
Oh, no.
You know, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, she'd obviously changed her mind partway through about when this character was going to die. And then that's why you need an editor, because you need a second pair of eyes.
This is it.
To spot things like that, because they will write down the names of your characters and make sure nobody dies and then reappears.
Yeah.
And make sure they don't change from red hair to brown hair.
Yeah, it's extremely unwise to try and edit and proofread your own writing in this case, I would say.
Especially with a book,
Yeah, a book is not the same as a blog post, you know. And going back to the kill your darlings thing, not everything that pops into your head needs to go on the page.
Yeah.
Sometimes, frequently in fact, you do have to chop bits out. Hard truths come out when it comes to creative writing in particular. If you're writing for an audience, even if you're self-publishing rather than traditionally publishing, you need to bear your audience in mind and produce something that's not just of really high quality, but something that people will want to read. It can't just be pleasing to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it can, but it won't sell.
Yeah, or if you want to sell your second book and your first book is a mess, nobody's going to go on to the second one. When I read Amazon reviews of self-published books, the biggest complaint again and again and again is that they're littered with errors. And it's something that can be fixed so easily. Sure, you have to shell out some cash. But if you want your work to be respected, there's no getting around the fact that you really, really need to get it properly, professionally proofread and edited. Having your mate read it through will catch some errors, but it's unlikely to catch the glitches that really, really bug readers. And when readers are bugged, they leave reviews about it.
I always do. I always do.
I do. I read a book recently that it was a good book.
Mm-hmm.
But it was self-published and there were points where it was so self-indulgent and where an editor would have said, chop that entire chapter, it's self-indulgent.
Was it non-fiction or fiction?
It was non-fiction. It was about minimalism and it was about kind of this guy's journey to minimalism in his own life.
Okay, very good.
And yeah, you know, interesting topic.
Yeah.
And interesting to hear, but there were parts of it that I could almost hear my own inner editor screaming, those last six paragraphs are so unnecessary.
Yeah.
And it was a good book and it's made a lot of sales because it's written by a guy who's got a very popular blog and all this. But it could have really done with some firm editing.
And objective feedback, you know, even if you're not going to have it edited that thoroughly, at least get some objective feedback. Get somebody who knows something about publishing to read it.
Yeah. Like I read this book initially I hadn't looked whether it was self-published or not. When it started to annoy me, I
Yes.
looked and discovered that it was under a publishing company's name, but then I discovered that the guy had set up the publishing company.
That's one of my pet hates.
So even if it was edited, I get the feeling that it was edited by somebody who was a bit of a yes man.
Yeah.
And who's going to tell the owner of the publishing company? You know, it's so it wasn't a bad book, but it could have been so much better.
Yeah, I think the problem that I've had is it's sort of you've made me think about it really, is when I get to, if I don't know something's self-published, usually what alerts me is that the book is annoying me because it's self-indulgent,
Yes, yeah.
because it's unnecessarily wordy or long or involved,
Yeah.
or the character's a bit of a Gary Stu or a Mary Sue. I always think this reads like self-publishing, and then you look, and then you find that it's a vanity publishing house. It's like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
And I think moving on to our next point, just as we've said that you need to invest in the words of your book, terrible book covers are another of the biggest fails. I will never, ever forgive Philippa for introducing me to lousybookcovers.com.
You love that site and you know it.
Oh, I love, oh, I do, but good Lord, it's a collection, listeners, of some of the worst self-published book covers out there. Now,
Seriously, if you're listening, seriously go to lousybookcovers.com. I know that Laurie and I have both even submitted some that we've seen,
yes.
because you can submit them. And it's not just the covers, which are brilliantly terrible, but also just you have to look at the tags that the blogger who runs the site puts, because they just add to the
Oh, they
hilarity of them,
make it. They
don't
really
they?
do.
It's a bit hard to explain, but seriously, go and look. And if anything is going to convince you to get someone who knows what they're doing to design your book cover, this site will.
Absolutely. Because as we've pointed out, publishing is an investment. It does cost money. And just as we are super fond of saying that not everyone's a writer, it stands to reason that not everybody's a book cover designer.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not. In terms of composition, I'm dreadful. If you absolutely have nothing to spend, I would suggest waiting until you do have something to spend, and then spending it on having a book cover designed professionally.
There are even people, and I wouldn't recommend this normally, but there are even people on Fiverr.com,
Yeah.
Fiverr.com, who will design book covers. And so do you can see examples of people's work, so do have a look, because some of them are terrible. But you can, if you do a bit of research and you really can't afford anything else, you can get a semi-decent book cover on Fiverr.com.
It's
And
better than
it's
anything you'll do in paint, let's put it that way.
so you know, even if, and that's $5, it's not even £5.
True.
That's about £3.50. So seriously, if you've got, you know, if you can't afford a professional book cover designer, which not everyone can, of course, you know, it's better to go through Fiverr or something like that than if you don't know what you're doing. Like, I know my way around Photoshop. I design t-shirts and various things, and I still probably wouldn't design my own book covers. So, you know, it's worth looking into options.
Yeah, it is really, really worth investing. So the next point that we're going to look at is formatting. Lovely formatting.
Formatting your self-published book can be a bit complicated, but failing to do it correctly is another self-publishing fail that you should avoid at all costs. The reason it's a bit complicated is that the formatting varies depending on the platform you're using. So if you're publishing a hardback book with Lulu, that will need different formatting to a Kindle ebook, for instance. And bearing in mind, most self-publishers publish on a variety of platforms all at once, to maximize their reach. It makes the most sense, in a lot of cases. So it may be that you need to format your book for Lulu, you need to format your book for CreateSpace, you need to format your book for ebooks in a kind of EPUB format, PDF format, all of these. And that's why it gets complicated. So Something to be aware of is that most of the print publishing sites have templates that you can download and use, and that's for your cover and the pages inside the book. And it's well worth grabbing these because they make sure that the cover you design or that someone designs for you is the right size for the front of the book,
It's always
which
handy.
is quite important because something that features quite a lot on lousybookcovers.com is things that have clearly been squished upwards or, flattened. And like that could have been a decent cover, but now you've stretched it. And that you can also use the templates to make sure that your margins aren't wonky or that your words don't start overlapping. Because finding out when you've already sent it to print that your font doesn't really work is a nightmare. So it's well worth taking time before you publish to get it right to then save yourself a lot of work and frustration later on.
I've made the mistake of opening lousybookcovers.com, listeners.
Close it now. We have a
Oh gosh,
podcast to
it's
finish.
just terrible.
Don't say another word.
Oh dear, let me close that. Right, I'm
Or
back.
bear in mind, listeners, I'm only being stern because Laurie and I have lost a good 4 working days over time on
Weeks.
that
Weeks. I've woken up emaciated and stinking after just, I have no idea what's gone on for the best part of a week. I've lost time on that site. It's outrageous. So yes, as Pip's saying, however, if you're going to maximize your reach, you do need to make sure that your formatting is platform specific and platform appropriate. There are conventions, there are certain fonts that are traditionally publishing fonts for a very good reason.
Yes, certain fonts are better in print and others are better on a screen.
Absolutely, are you going to go for serif? Are you going to go for sans serif? Work out what you need to do. You'll only realise how important that kind of thing is when you try and read a full novel in Arial.
The thing is, this is the kind of thing that you'll either listen and think, right, I must look at those formats and sort that out. Or you'll listen and hear la 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 la, and if that's the case, there's nothing to be ashamed of. It's complicated. If that's the case, it's often worth paying someone 30 quid
Yeah,
to format your book for you. Give them,
absolutely.
the sizing you want. Because also, say you want to publish only with Lulu, which I wouldn't recommend. It's the only site I've never sold anything on, weirdly. But as an example, say you want to, you'll find that the measurements and template for a hardback book are different from a paperback book. So you might even need different, manuscripts for the same site.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I remember buying a book. I was silly me. I was supporting somebody. I fell for somebody's please pre-order my book.
We've all done it.
Oh, and I did. And I have this print copy of this dreadful book. And it's all in Arial. It's all in Arial 14-point. And
And
it's.
I like Arial on a screen, but it's.
Well, that's the thing, Serif is for print and sans serif is for the screen. That tends to be the difference. And I always want to call it sans serif.
Me too.
Every
Me
time I say
too.
sans serif, we're cursed, we're French speakers, listeners.
We spend a good proportion of our day communicating in Franglais,
Yeah.
so this is painful to us.
Yeah, so sans serif. It just means without the little sticky bits that come on print font.
There are little flicks on letters, aren't there?
Yeah, like Times New Roman is serif and Arial is sans serif.
Yeah, they're smoother. I tend to prefer the look of the sans serif ones myself. But like you say, if you're setting about reading a novel, that's hard going.
Yeah, weirdly, you wouldn't even think about it until you opened a novel and saw it written in sans serif. And it really does. Oh, it's a killer. Honestly, it's a real killer. So, moving on from that then, and sort of going back to what I just touched on, one of the final big self-publishing fails that we're going to cover this time, because of course we can't cover them all, there are so many, is relying on family and friends to proofread, edit, and/or buy your book.
Many podcasts ago, we did a really big rant about.
Another.
I know, it was one of our first proper rants, actually, about someone who asked for people to proofread his book in return, do you remember?
Praise and Chocolate.
For Praise and Chocolate. And this was a seemingly successful self-publisher with plenty of books on the go already.
$20 each, they were.
Yeah, and that enraged us at the time, and I can feel rage rising in both of us again as we think of it.
Yes, it's enraging me currently.
And that initially enraged us because we are proofreaders and editors who need to get paid in money rather than chocolate to do our work.
I do like chocolate.
Even though we may spend some of that money on chocolate.
That's not the point.
Yes, we get the choice. That's the thing. Whereas in the context of this episode, it's enraging in a slightly different way. And that is that you're not going to do yourself justice. And you're not going to do your readers justice by publishing a book that's been read and edited by people who want to say nice things to you because they're your friends.
Oh, well done, darling. You wrote a book. Have is a your, biscuit.
Is your mum ever going to go, you know, that whole bit is rubbish and that character doesn't make any sense?
Yeah. Your exposition style in chapter two doesn't work.
Yeah.
Thanks, it, mum.
Yeah.
It's just no, not the
your mum
you talk
will
about
be,
over a cup of tea, is it?
Your mum will be so proud that she will praise every word in it.
Of course.
And that's why.
That's what mums do. That's a mum's job.
Indeed. And that's why she shouldn't proofread your book.
You know, and don't put your mum in that position either.
Yeah. What if she thinks it's terrible? I have this if I do work for a friend, which I rarely do for this reason.
Yeah.
And if I ever do, I have to be very explicit in advance about whether they can take it.
How honest do you want me to be?
Yeah, that's it. And I will actually only take on friends as clients if they explicitly say, I want this to be good. And so that means I want you to be as honest as you would be with anybody.
Yeah, be brutal.
And that's the, yeah, that's the only way I'll take a friend on. And
it's still not easy, is it?
No, God, no.
No, so just like we would seriously, seriously dissuade you from using your family and friends as some people like to call them, beta readers.
Again, breathe.
We would also dissuade you from relying on family and friends to buy and therefore finance your book. Now, there's nothing wrong with being proud of your work. There's nothing wrong with sharing it with supportive family and friends, all of whom might be happy to chip in for a copy. You know, you've yeah. written a book. Great. You know, particularly if it's a novel. I mean, if it's an e-book about, I don't know, Twitter marketing, they might not be so enthused. But if you reckon it's the next great British novel, yeah, they might well want a copy for their mantelpiece, and you can sign it, and you know, sit around in a smoking jacket with a glass of wine, and you know, have a little evening where you give people
yes.
autographs and things. However, the key to actually marketing and selling your book, rather than just playing at publishing, is to effectively identify and then target the right niche or niches. And we've come full circle back to marketing.
Yeah.
Your target audience should inform every decision you make from the minute you sit down to write the book, or indeed the minute you plan the book, to the way you design it, the cover, the publishing, the platform, the formatting. Everything about that book needs to be infused with an awareness of your target audience and your target market.
And if you're relying on your friends and family to buy your book, you only have a limited number of friends and family.
And you might limit it further if you carry bugging them.
Exactly. And so it may be that on your first day, you sell one to your sister and your brother and your mum and your dad and your neighbour and your whatever. But that will quickly drop off. And then you need the sales to be coming from somewhere. I was reading a self-publishing forum once, and if you sell on Kindle, you'll know that you can go in and look at your stats every day if you mm-hmm. want to, and see how many books you've sold in which countries and that kind of thing. And this guy went onto the forum and said, there's something wrong with the Kindle stats.
Okay.
He said, I told all my work colleagues about my book and seven of them said they'd buy it, but I've only sold two. There's something wrong with the Kindle stats. And other people had to gently say to him in the forum, no, they were being polite. They're not going to buy your book. They're your work colleagues. Like, you know, why would they buy your sci-fi, supernatural, gothic horror? You know, and This is the thing. Who wants to be sold to by their friends?
No, it's not fun. I mean, yes, everyone's happy to support a friend, but it does get awkward if your friend is selling something that you just don't want to buy. You know, because how far do you go? You know, so, or you might just not be able to afford it.
Yeah,
You might not have
absolutely.
any spare cash in the pot, and you might just not know what to say. You know, aside from all that, though, aside from everything, you know, in terms of kind of friendship and, you know, appropriateness, it's just not a good way to sell a book.
It's not. It's not a long-lasting plan.
No, it's a quick fix.
And it doesn't, you know, if you're publishing, it's presumably because you want people to see what you've written. And that's not going to happen if you only tell people who are close to you about it.
Absolutely. You know, I think for a lot of people, it can be a bit of a sticking plaster because they're too nervous to go out and actually promote themselves, as we've described earlier, going on blogging tours, arranging readings, contacting people, you know, releasing a press release, going on other people's blogs to talk about your work, giving interviews. That's the kind of stuff you need to be doing. So hopefully this whole episode has just been a very quick stop into some of the biggest self-publishing fails that we've seen, and really kind of how to, if not avoid them, then at least identify them and consider whether you want to fall for them.
And if you've listened to this podcast, you've now got no excuse for not even considering whether you need a good cover or not. It's true that we do still judge books by their cover, much as we shouldn't, we do. Or getting it proofread, like, you've got no excuse now. You can't pretend you didn't know because we've told you.
Sorry.
Yep, afraid so.
Yeah, so we would love to chat more about this topic. We would love to hear from you about the kinds of self-publishing fails that you've encountered. What are your pet hates with self-published books? What would make you buy indie books more often, either from small publishing houses that self-publish or from authors themselves? What puts you right off? Come and tell us what you think on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast.
And now it is time for your favourite slot. It is
Favorite thing.
the little bird recommendations of the week, in which Laurie and I share something that we've seen or read or enjoyed this week that we think you might want to know about. So, Laurie, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation, shield your ears, sensitive listeners, is a bit sweary. It's
Goodness
called,
me.
I know, heaven forfend, it is called Authors Are Arseholes. I'm ignoring the fact there are only two asteriskers. Asteriskus? Asterisks. So authors are assholes or authors are arseholes, and it was published in the Huffington Post by author and founder of Bad Redhead Media, Rachel Thompson. And as I say, it's called Authors Are Arseholes, and it has a great picture of a crying child at the top. And it starts off with, "Oh, relax, I'm an author and I adore authors." Oh, tricked. Most authors aren't arseholes. Really, only a few are, and I suppose it depends on one's definition. I'm usually pretty nice, with only the occasional bossy rant. So she goes on to talk about some authors who were, to all intents and purposes, arseholes. But what I kind of really liked about the post, I'm not super keen on the attention grabby title, although it did work. But what I really like about the article is that there is a big long list of book marketing do's.
Oh, brilliant. Because we've done a lot of don'ts, but the do's are very important as well.
And this author says, "I do hear a lot of whining." Now, when Pip and I are feeling less polite, we agree fully with that.
This is true.
Many times authors are overwhelmed by the sheer volume and learning curve of book marketing. So far, so true, and so fair. You know, that was my interjection there. And she's put, "As an author of three best-selling books and an author marketing consultant," link, link, see, self-promotion, "I finally just couldn't take it anymore. The whiny, 'I've done everything and I can't sell any books' negativity I hear daily on social media. No way they haven't. I'm sorry, but nope. not possible. When someone tells me they've tried it all, I rarely believe them because most people just don't know what everything is. It's taken me years to try and learn, to fail miserably, and to succeed to a degree, whatever that means. This book marketing is what I do for a living, for myself and my clients. New tools come out daily. Being an author is hard work, regardless of how one's published. So what to do? Stop being an asshole and get to work. And I think she's got a very good point. This is something that Pip and I do talk about with regards to freelance writing and running your own writing business. When people say, I've tried it all, I don't know how to get started as a freelance writer, it sends cold sweats down our back.
Because usually they haven't.
You'll go and have a look. Their LinkedIn isn't there. Their Twitter hasn't been updated. They don't have a website. The website's not populated, or it's got some weird moving image on there with like gold stars coming off their names or something. You know, it's a horrendous, you know, you can see that somebody's not done the research, they've not done the work, or both. And now this article really does cover it. It's got a big long list of things that you can do to successfully market and effectively market your book. And I think it's well worth a look. I mean, she's put bitch and moan that you've done everything, I bet you haven't, and still haven't sold any books, I don't believe you, sorry. And I think that's what it comes down to, that book publishing is very hard work. It's very hard work. Everybody can publish a book now. There are lots of people who aren't interested in publishing good quality, just the same as there are freelance writers who are interested in churning out rubbish. Some people will just go for the numbers game. They will publish a load of rubbish, and you have to make sure that your book stands out above all that. So less whining, more book marketing. Brilliant post.
Fabulous recommendation.
Thank you very much. Now, Philip.
Thank you. My recommendation is for those days when you're staring at a blank page and you can't get started, you can't get anything written, and it's all a bit hard going. Mm-hmm. It's a light-hearted way to get your fingers typing, and it's called Written Kitten.
Oh, I know about this.
And what it is most of the page is a text box for you to write in. Okay. And there's a word count at the bottom of the page, and then you have settings and you can choose a kitten, mm-hmm. a bunny, or a puppy.
Oh.
And you can choose a certain number of words. And you absolutely should set it for 100 because that's the smallest. And what this does is every 100 words you write, you get a new kitten or puppy or bunny picture on the other side of the screen.
Lush.
And so if you've run out of steam at 94 words, nothing will get you moving quicker than, you know, finding a new sentence just so you can see your kitten, and then you'll go, oh, that's cute, and you'll be all full of inspired ideas.
Oh, I love that. And NaNoWriMo's not far off, is it? NaNoWriMo.
Oh, that would be
NaNoWriMo.
You do. Yeah, it would be great for that. And if you just, you know, it's not very serious, but sometimes it takes weird tricks to get yourself working.
Mm-hmm.
And as with Laurie's link, the link will be in the show notes. It's quick and easy, and it's, we all need a bit more cute in our lives, really.
Yeah, it's quick and easy, and it's a kitten.
Yeah, or a bunny, or a puppy.
Yeah, we need to get them to branch out, because I think I'd really like to do it with marmosets.
I'd go for baby elephants.
Oh, yeah, good call. Good call. So, listeners, if you have any particular opinions on what kind of animal would get you writing, what you'd like to see after 100 hard-won words of copywriting, or indeed fiction writing, do let us know. And we will be happy to campaign with you to get more cute things in return for more words.
That sounds good.
Fabulous. So that brings us neatly to the end of A Little Bird Told Me, episode 78, in which we've been taking a look at some of the most common self-publishing fails. Horrible, awful fails. As we say, you can come and chat to us on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast, nice and easy. Or you can subscribe to the podcast or choose other ways to contact us via social media, our websites, all those kinds of things at our Podomatic homepage, which is alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com.
And so, thank you very much for listening. I have been Philippa Willits.
And I have been Laurie Hartshorn, and we will catch you next time.